The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 28 of The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories, recalls the 1984 season. 2 years earlier, the kingdom had been denied immortality by a late Offaly goal in the All-Ireland final. In 83, a similar fate was Kerry's in the Munster decider. Only time would tell whether this particular bunch of players had reached the end of an era. During the course of the programme, we'll reproduce extracts from the Kerryman newspaper. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you hear each time.
Part 1.
Kerry went into the 1984 season off the back of two heartbreaking late losses against Offaly in the 1982 All-Ireland Final and Cork in the 1983 Munster Final. Newcomer Ambrose O'Donovan remembers how the final whistle had barely blown on Kerry's 1983 season when thoughts turned to 1984.
I was on the panel in 83 as well, and I remember coming out of Páirc Uí Chaoimh. So I don't know who said it inside the dressing room after the game. "Now guys, tis make your mind up time. What do we do?" They said, "Lads, we're going to have one more cut." That was the first time centenary was mentioned. We have to win the centenary final. And in a way, I suppose 83 was a godsend, because it fellas got revitalised. That time there was no backdoor or nothing. Your championship was over. They had a summer to free up, if you like. They were free to do whatever they wanted to do, play golf, whatever they wanted to do. And I think they came back with a renewed hunger, and it did have a bearing on it. I think the fact that it was centenary year, and I think that everyone knuckled down and got involved after the disappointments of 82 and 83, you know, and I think maybe that Cork done us a great favour in 83, because every fellow was revitalised and rejuvenated come 84.
Tommy Doyle says the time off after the early exit of 1983 afforded the players a chance to recharge the batteries.
The team took a break. I'd say for the first time a lot of lads hit the roads of Tralee and had a bit of a time out, and we kind of didn't meet or come together since July, when we were beaten by Cork. That time the Munster final used to be around maybe the 12th to 14th of July, and around September after the All-Ireland final, Dublin I think beat Galway at the same day, I think it was the famous day of the 12 or 13 men. And I remember getting a phone call from Mico, and we all convened outside in Bernie O'Callaghan's Redcliffe house in Ballybunion, God rest him. It was a wet Saturday, and gang of us went out, because we were actually like kids again, because we hadn't seen one another for a long time, which for us was a lot, because we'd have been training for a lot of them. It was a wet November, October Saturday, pouring rain, and we togged out in Ballybunion Bomber and Logie's pitch, which was a fine dry pitch in the day because it was down by the beach. I think we had a bit of a kick around and a bit of soccer in that caver. But we all convened down in Bernie's hotel, and Dwyer was there, and I think Frank King, God rest him, was there as well. And the next thing, we had a meeting anyway, and we just had and Dwyer stood up and he made a statement in fairness to me. He says, "Lads," and he looked around and he says, "Dublin were able to win this year's All-Ireland title with, I think, 12 or 13 men. Well," he says, "I'll take these 15 or 20 men in here any time and we'll win any All-Ireland." We all gave him a bit of a rouse, and I think he brought us back into training the week after that, and he wanted to win the 84 title because of it being centenary year. I think it was important for Kerry, for us to do that, for our tradition as well. I think it was fantastic.
Prior to beginning their provincial campaign, the Kingdom secured the league title, beating Galway in the final in Limerick. Journalist Martin Breheny was in the Kerry dressing room following that success. He recalls Mick O'Dwyer attempting to play down the Kingdom's chances before the championship season.
The league final in Limerick against Galway, and they won the league final, good league final, I recall. But at the time, again, I think I was the only journalist down the dressing room afterwards. It wasn't like nowadays, and I was working with the Irish Press to go down anyway, and Mick was there, and Mick was chatting away to him, and he starts spinning this line about, you know, we're in transition, because in the last two hours, Ireland, we're in transition and the whole lot. And I said, "By the way, Mico," I said, "you had 11 of the team that won the All-Irelands, that won all these All-Irelands." And he looks at me, and a big Scott of a laugh, and he disappears down into the rest. He knew damn well, it was all old spoof. But that was Mico. I mean, what he added to Kerry, and I mean, I've written it several times, I think Mico Dwyer is the most remarkable man in the history of the GAA. And there are people who knock him, and people who this, that and the other. I think they haven't a clue what they're talking about. He's unbelievable, and still to this day, what he's doing for football, what he's doing for the GAA, and never really gets the credit in the official quarters of the GAA that he should have.
John Kennedy attended that league final as a spectator. On the way home, he and his friends discussed a potential Kerry team for the championship. Little did Kennedy know at the time that his name would be added to that list.
We were picking a team for the Munster final on the way home, and certainly I wasn't in the team anyway, I can tell you. It was something we always did, really, and that night I got a call from our chairman in Badlang for the time, Alan Kennelly, to say I was called into Kerry training on Tuesday night. You know, I was playing reasonably good football with the club, and I'd been involved in the 21s, but, you know, to be called into the Kerry senior squad, you know, I initially thought it was just in for training and you know, just to be part of a panel for the championship, and the initial thought was to hopefully to make the championship panel, but as things turned out, I went better than that, and I actually got my place in the team.
The nucleus of the Kerry squad remained from the four in a row winning teams of 1979 to 81. Gone were Jimmy Deanahan, Tim Kennelly and Paddy Lynch. New blood such as Ger Lynch, Timmy O'Dowd, John Kennedy and Dermot O'Donoghue would be introduced for the season opener against Tipperary. John Kennedy still remembers his first night joining up with the squad.
It was a very strange feeling going into Fitzgerald Stadium. I remember it vividly, you know. It was even where you went to the dressing room, I wasn't off air with that. Getting out of the car, there was a kind of a reluctance to go in, and you were going in among legends, but, you know, I went in, and I suppose from the very first introduction, guys like Shawnee Welch and Jack O'Shea and Bomber Nogi, they were fantastic, like, you know, just to name a few. They welcomed me and made me part of it, and obviously they knew there was a number of new guys coming in, and I was one of them, and those guys sheltered us and you know, explained things as cons went along, and they were fantastic, and they were great for young guys coming into the team.
Tom Spillane, having previously represented his county at midfield and centre forward, found a new position for 1984 after missing 83 through injury.
I had come back from injury, burst my ankle in a club game. 84, there was a series of challenge games and A versus B's and so on and so forth. They started experimenting and they brought more fellas into the panel and signed on. Experimented in a challenge game up in Galway, Corrifin. They experimented with me at the back, and it seemed to work that day, so it moved on.
Spillane had the unenviable task of taking over the number 6 jersey from Tim Kennelly. The game against Tipperary was a stroll in the park, Kerry winning by 23 points to 6. 3 points apiece from Mikey Sheehy and Owen Liston, plus another courtesy of Timmy O'Dowd, had Kerry in front by 7 points to no score. Tipperary's first score came 10 minutes from half-time. 2 points from Timmy Dowd and another by Mikey Sheehy gave Kerry a 10 points to 3 half-time advantage. The biggest cheer of the first period came 2 minutes before the break when Tip goalkeeper Anthony Colville saved a Jack O'Shea penalty. John Kennedy feared his championship debut was at an end following an indifferent start to life in the Kerry jersey. However, he would go on to repay the faith shown in him by trainer Mick O'Dwyer.
Things didn't go particularly well for me. I didn't get on the ball too often, and when I did, I didn't do too well with it. And I'll always remember at half-time, like, you know, I was expecting to be taken off, I'll be quite honest, because I didn't seem to be fitting in. And I remember O'Dwyer saying to me, he said, look, that's the first 35 minutes now, that's over, it's time to do business. And early in the second half, I remember Jacko got a ball maybe about 35 yards out, an easy score on, and he actually turned back and gave it to me, and I kicked it over the bar, and, you know, I didn't look back from then on. I kicked 5 more, and you know, it turned out to be a pretty impressive debut, really.
6 points from John Kennedy were the standout memories from the second half. There was also an audacious goal attempt by Timmy Dowd on 64 minutes.
Colville's kick out from the Tipperary goal was caught by Timmy O'Dowd about 40 yards from the goal. The quick thinking O'Dowd immediately lobbed the ball towards goal as Colville made a frantic dash back to his line. The ball passed over Colville's head as he ran, but to the dismay of the crowd, it clipped the crossbar and went over for a point.
The 17-point demolition of Tip was John O'Keefe's final championship match of 49 for Kerry. O'Keefe was amongst the subs for the Munster final, but subsequently announced his inter-county retirement. With O'Keefe out of the picture, Sean Walsh was moved to the pivotal position. It was not a switch Walsh was keen on.
I felt like that maybe I ended up full-back very early, because I ended up playing full-back at 26. I felt I had another few years at midfield, but John O'Keefe retired, so I was asked to go back. Maybe the selectors might have felt I wasn't going to last midfield, I don't know, but I ended up going back there anyway.
There was to be a new midfield combination for Kerry for the Munster final against Cork, and a new team captain. Dermot O'Donoghue's omission for the final would ultimately afford Ambrose O'Donovan the honour of leading out his county. Firstly, however, O'Donovan had to secure a spot in the starting 15. He explains the circumstances that led to that eventuality.
Do I put it very straight to me? We had a challenge game, a trial game. Jacko and myself, and against us was Vincent O'Connor and Dermot Hennifin. Now he says, Rosie, it's either you or Vincent, and you mark each other in the trial game. So it was kind of head-to-head. So I must have done all right that night, because I got the nod. I remember Dwyer coming out after me, just winked at me, and he walked past me. He said, no more, you know. So I finally felt happy enough to blow on docks. And I remember feeling very good coming out of Daxbury. We said that, and then the team has been picked Tuesday night. There was a Coonan man down here, I was passed down every morning. God rest his soul, he worked with the Urban Council. He was an uncle in all the areas. But every morning he'd be out to me, he was a small man with a cap, and he'd be out to me. And he was very interested in Kerry football and the Kerry team. All football, but very interested in Kerry football. He kind of said it to me Monday morning, "Well, how close are you?" Jesus said, "I think I'm very close." "Oh, Jesus," he says, "we're hunting me brains again last night." He says, "we're going off our head." When the team was picked Tuesday night, and I went down to work Wednesday morning, and I'd been told that I was on the team Tuesday night, but I just keep my mouth shut because they weren't naming the team until Wednesday or whatever. I met him Wednesday morning, and the word was out, of course, that I was on the team, I suppose. And he was below. I could see him jumping around the road waiting for me to come down. And the same morning, I walked down. I went across the street. Walked on across when he landed across the street running. "Oh, Jesus," he says, "I don't know, is it a good or a bad thing?" He says, "I know I'm going to go for that." He says, "You're on midfield."
So, O'Donovan's first championship game for Kerry was when he captained them in the 84 Munster final. As previously mentioned, the man he replaced as skipper was Diarmaid O'Donoghue. The honour had remained in the family, sort of. Ambrose's wife Mary is a first cousin of Diarmaid O'Donoghue. Mary's father and Diarmaid's mother were brother and sister. Along with O'Donovan, Ger Power and Willie Maher were also drafted in. Out went John O'Keefe, Timmy O'Dowd and Diarmaid O'Donoghue. This game was also Willie Maher's first Munster final. Some last-minute advice from Owen Liston set him up for this game.
"I remember talking to the bomber. We were walking around in the parade beforehand, and he said, 'Look,' he says, 'if we're under any pressure on the corner, just flake it in,' like, you know." And I suppose to hear that, like, it takes off a bit of the pressure that you don't think you have to do something, you know, spectacular, like, you know, just put it down and get it in around to the bomber, and he'd win it.
Cork raced into a 4-1 lead after only 10 minutes. Owen Liston and Mikey Sheehy made it a 1-point game. Cork then went 2 in front, 5-3. Kerry took over after that. 3 quick points saw them move into a lead which they would never surrender.
Bomber into Ger Power, selling ducks and drakes to Christy Ryan. Ryan has lost his point. Power in and goal, and a great score by Ger Power wearing number 11.
That was an absolutely superb score by Ger Power. Wonderful score. He sold dummies left, right and centre to Christy Ryan. He put him all over the place, and he came inside him, hopped the ball once or twice, and with the right leg when the goal was on, popped the ball over the bar by Ger Power wearing number 11 in his jersey. Wonderful score by the Aston Stacks men.
Now the kick in again. It's 5 to Cork, it's 4 to Kerry. Out round the middle of the field, and Ambrose O'Donovan wins the ball over there, and the captain doing well around the middle of the field, left footed this time inside, looking for the bomber again. High and it's broken well from the bomber, picked up here by Mikey Sheehy. Mikey right inside for John Kennedy. The number 10 is loose. This is a great kick from John Kennedy. Mighty score.
Lovely score from the Ashley men. It off that with Ambrose O'Donovan in the middle of the field, got the ball coming on, gave it to Mikey Sheehy, and once again the Stacks man, beautiful vision by him, gave the ball to Kennedy. Kennedy with the right leg popped the ball over the bar. Wonderful score by Kerry. They're flying at the moment.
They're level again, 5 apiece, and Jacko wins the ball nicely in the middle of the field, but his pass has gone astray. Coleman Corrigan picks it up now for Cork, and he's trying to find his fellow at midfielder. That's Dominic Creedon getting away from John Kennedy. Left footed effort. Kerry backs under a little bit of pressure now, and Shawnee Welsh is stepping well off his man inside. This is a race for possession, and again Mick Spillane, he has the legs on Dinny Allen so far.
That's great interception by Spillane again. He has the legs on him, ran away from completely. The ball has gone inside both of them. The Temple Norman turned around, got the ball and passed it back out. Great interception.
What a pass by Jacko to Sheehy to Power. Stacks working well. Ger Power again ramping at the moment, and this is a beautiful score from Ger Power.
Yeah, and it all came from Jacko Sheehy in the middle of the field, got the ball, Power was running off him. Wonderful score. The Stacks man is absolutely flying. He literally careered through the Cork defence, popped the ball over the bat. Great score by the Aston Stacks man.
A pulled hamstring then forced Ger Power out of the game, Ogie Moran replacing him a little shy of the 20 minute mark. Fortunately, the loss of Power did not impact on an ever-improving Kerry. Less than 60 seconds after his departure,
did again a great catch inside there by Shawnee Walsh. What a mighty catch, Rishi.
Yeah, great leap by Shawnee Walsh. What a wonderful pair of hands he was. He was known there a couple of years ago as the super sub. Now he's after Simington. He's placed at full-back. Great feeling by Walsh.
He kept it pay by Spillane. Spillane into Bomber. Bomber back to Spillane. There's a chance here. The Bomber makes it. Surely it's a kick. And Willie Maher with the goal. What a finish by Willie Maher.
Oh, that's an absolutely superb. That's a real trademark Kerry goal. It was Willie Maher, the Milton Castle man, who was at the end of that pass, wearing number 15, playing corner forward for Kerry today. And it was a 4, 5, 6 passes all along, and finished up with Bomber passing across the face of the goal, and the ball went in along the ground. Maher was there and crashed into the ball into the back of the Cork net.
Willie Maher was happy with his finish that day.
I think it came down the line. I think Pat Spillane jumped over. I think might have been one or two supporters down the line, and it came in. It was kind of flicked across the goal, and I just met it first time in the volley. Now there was no one inside in the goals, or the goalie was a bit to one side, so it was easy. It wasn't too bad, like, but I connected with it right, I suppose. Like, I suppose you could connect with it wrong as well.
Rather than serve as a wake-up call for Cork, that goal drove Kerry on.
The kick by Jacko inside again, and racing onto it there is Mikey Sheehy, across for Spillane, Pat Spillane into an empty net, and another goal for Kerry.
Yeah, another goal for Kerry. Mikey Sheehy and Pat Spillane, that terrible duo, because they set it up there. The ball was just gone wide because Sheehy ran onto it. He saw Spillane running inside him. The blonde head temple lawman took the pass wearing number 12, their wing forward there, bang into the back of the net.
The Kingdom led 2-9 to 7 points at half time. 3 minutes into the second period, Kerry put further significant daylight between themselves and Cork.
Jacko again with the ball to his midfield partner, Ambrose O'Donovan, the captain, drives it inside, puts somebody on the run. The man he's put on the run is the Bomber. The Bomber now shaping up to the Cork defence, still trying to send ducks and drakes. Kevin Cahill is trying to get the ball after him. Nicely inside again for Spillane. Oh, beautiful chip over the goalie and into the back of the net from Pat Spillane.
Oh, lovely chip by Spillane. A wonderful goal by Kerry again. It all came. Ambrose O'Donovan got the ball in the middle seed. He left a lovely pinpoint pass away out to the wing. Bomber ran on today, got around, went inside his man, sold dummies all over the place. The Bomber, listen, what a big man, but he's so fit. He sold dummies all over the place, passed the ball inside the pass Spillane. There was a defender coming across, Spillane turned around, and he just literally chipped the ball. Beautiful vision, lovely skill, into the back of the net, over the goalkeeper. Gary, that was skill, that was style, that's his career, their best.
With Kerry leading 3-10 to 8 points, the issue was done and dusted. Ambrose O'Donovan admits he enjoyed the remainder of that game, which was in the bag by half time on a real summer's day.
Such heat I'd never played before. I thought it was a very hot day. I remember the tar biting on the road going up to the pitch. All the roof, my mouth got white, dusty, and there was water. That time, you see, we didn't have the Mayrish because running in with water. It was nice to play in the second half, actually. It was a nice feeling. It was a particularly nice feeling with 10 minutes to go. We had the game in the bag and it was won. So, it was nice. A nice memory.
Some wayward carry and accuracy up front, combined with equally erratic defending by the Kingdom, left Cork back into proceedings. Late points from Jack O'Shea and Tom Spillane consolidated Kerry's lead. They ran out winners by 3-14 to 2-10.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
Ambrose O'Donovan had safely come through his first Munster final. Teammate Owen Liston never had any doubts.
Didn't face him one bit. Like, Ambrose was a man, I'd say, at 15 or 14, like, you know, and he was an experienced man as well, and he was a great leader. He was totally selfless on the field. He gave in a fabulous ball, great trajectory always. It was a pleasure to play inside him with his deliveries, and you knew that Ambrose would empty the tank every time he'd go out, especially against Cork.
There were two changes for the semi-final. Ogie Moran, a sub in the Munster final, retained the centre-forward berth. John Egan was brought in a corner forward. Out went Ger Power and Willie Maher. Maher's season had ended prematurely. An unfortunate leg break sustained the week after the victory over Cork.
He played well, reasonably okay that day, like, you know, but the following week then I broke my leg a week later, so I was basically out for, I missed all 84 and 85, and even though I had played in the Munster final in 84, the rules would be like that there's a separate championship after the Munster final, so I got no All-Ireland medal in 84.
Galway were the penultimate hurdle as Kerry sought to regain the Sam Maguire. Mikey Sheehy had Kerry's opening point in the third minute. That was sandwiched between Galway scores from Gay McManus and Padraig Conroy. After Galway went further ahead through Val Daly, the Kingdom hit back.
Egan to Liston. Liston looking up, the run is being continued by who? John Kennedy. Nicely nipped in by John Kennedy. And a great score from the man from Asti.
Yeah, but once again, it was great, a great passing movement. And John Egan, who missed the Munster final, left the ball off there into John Kennedy. And John Kennedy, he's in tremendous form this year, Gary. No doubt at all about it. And the one thing about Kennedy is left and right, he's deadly accurate with both feet.
Ambrose is out there. Great catch by the captain. Ambrose O'Donovan gathers it nicely. Liston plays it over to the far side again. Mikey Sheehy this time. His opponent slips. Still Mikey Sheehy. Toward a hand. Moving in. Gaining in advantage and gaining ground all the time. And Sheehy from a long way out. A peach of a point.
Oh, that was absolutely classical stuff. Long kick out by Cormor there in the Guinea. William and Donovan went up high in the middle of the field. Got the ball over Findon 4. Left a lovely, beautiful pass. Out towards the Cuse extend. Over to Mikey Sheehy. And Mikey Sheehy with the grace and the style as only he can do. One of the greatest forwards we've ever seen so far, and he just floats the ball beautifully from 50 yards out over the bar. Lovely point, Gary.
Kerry took the lead for the first time in the 20th minute, then doubled the advantage. 10 minutes from half-time, Pádraig Kelly cut the lead in half. Kerry's advantage stood at 5-4. The remainder of the half was all Kerry's.
In again now for Mikey Sheehy. Mikey Sheehy trying to send the dummies to the Galway defence. They're not buying anything at the moment. Still holding possession from Sheehy. This will be a lovely one if it goes over. Ah, beautiful score from Mikey Sheehy.
Yeah, Kerry, that was an absolutely classical score. What a player, what a footballer. He's like a belly dancer out in the field. Paddy O'Shea came down at the other end of the field. Remember Kerry are defending the Canal goal here in Croke Park, and Paddy left a lovely ball up to Mickey Sheehy. He got the ball and he literally sold dummies all over the place. He guided like a belly dancer, sold his dummies, and nice and easy he landed the ball and tapped it in it. An absolutely classical score.
And here comes Ambrose gathering the kick out and gathering it well and kicking it over the bar. The man from Quinnequilla, the captain, leading by example.
Yes indeed, and that ball came in from the middle of the field from Jacko. A poor kick by him, it went into Pat Cormor's hands. Cormor kicked the ball straight out to Ambrose O'Donovan, and the Quinnequilla man from just outside the 45 metre line went right through, and with the right leg, the captain, leading by example, popped the ball over the bar there.
Still Jack O'Shea now looking up, head up all the time. On his left goes Tom Spillane. Well, Tom is trying to get on the scoreboard now if he can from centre halfback. Great run by the younger of the three brothers on Timpernaw. What a kick by Tom Spillane.
Oh, that's a superb point by Tom Spillane. He's been absolutely outstanding football. The defender came up, he cut right through the Galway defence like a knife through a butter. There was been coming at him, and from just outside the 21 metre line with the right leg, he just cut the ball straight and through over the back.
The kick out again towards the far side over there. Paddy O'Shea trying to get it for cut out by who? Who's the way back there? I think it's Tom Spillane again. It is. Gone back to his centre half-back position. Missed by the Galway centre half-back. John Kennedy nips it in. And what a pass to John Egan. There's a chance here for Egan. Soccer style. Brilliantly dispatched by Egan.
Oh, beautiful goal by John Egan. What a goal scorer he is. And it was John Kennedy's pinpoint pass. A wonderful pass by John Kennedy. Right in front of John Egan. And John Egan running into the canal goal, to the railway goal, sorry, here at Croke Park. The ball was on the ground. It just bobbled in front of him. A long ball over the defence. It ran in front of Egan and he came on, it bounced, and just with the left leg he just guided it without catching it into the back of the net to pass Cormor. A wonderful goal. He runs out, puts the hands up in the air. What a goal, what a player.
John Kennedy remembers the strike well and his role in proceedings.
There was a lot of space being created above by our forwards always, and Bomber and Egan and Mikey or Paul, whoever was in there, they were always running off the ball. And I remember I got a ball maybe about 50 or 55 yards out on the middle of the field, and I just had a look up, and I remember Egan pointed and I kicked the ball into space and he couldn't actually pick it up, but he first timed it to the net, and it was a fantastic finish. You know, at half time in the game, John came over and he said, a fantastic ball. You know, it was a superb pass. And things like that, when you're a young fella going out with Nerves in Croke Park on my first actually competitive match in Croke Park, that meant an awful lot, like, to come from a guy that I had been idolising among others for years, you know.
Half time arrived with Kerry ahead 1-8 to 4 points. Tomás Tierney put over 3 Galway points in the opening quarter of an hour of the second half, each time Kerry responded with one of their own through Owen Liston, Pat Spillane and Jack O'Shea. Approaching the midway point of the period, a Kerry goal settled the issue once and for all.
And here now is the chance for Michael Brennan. Mick Spillane holding up to him. Brennan plays it across. Gerry Lynch goes high. Great defending, Wishy.
Great defending by Kerry there, Gary, without fouling. That's the main thing. They're highly disciplined. And any time a Galway man gets the ball, they're around him.
And John Kennedy leave it go inside there. Maybe two. Is it Owen Liston over the far side? It is Owen Liston getting ahead of Pat O'Neill. Owen Liston with a pinpoint pass inside again. Nicely lipped in by Egan to Sheehy. Bang into the back of the net. A clinical goal.
Oh, superb goal by Mikey Sheehy. Wonderful goal by him altogether. What a goal scorer he is. He was at the end of that absolutely superb passing movement. It was Bomber Liston who got that ball in the middle of the field. The big man, Bomber Liston, he turned around, had a little look, and he said to himself, what will I do with this? He just popped the ball in, and the ball hopped in front of John Egan. And John Egan, with his right hand, just punched the ball over his defender. Mikey Sheehy was there, and he was just outside the small square, kicking into the canal goal here in Croke Park. And with his right leg, put Mickey Sheehy in that position, and he just can't miss. An absolutely superb goal. 2-11 to 7 points, Kerry coasting.
Kerry had beaten Galway 2-17 to 11 points. Kerry goalkeeper Charlie Nelligan was thrilled to be back in the final.
That was a heartbreak that time, in 82 and 83, and you know, it was sweet to get back up there again, because we thought it would never happen, right? Because the team, the great team, had kind of broken up a little bit. We were on a new mission again, like, and it was the start of it, and we could see that although people around us didn't probably see it, but the players themselves could see that there was something else in this team as well, you know, with the extra players that came on, that there was a makings of another good team, you know.
It was not all rosy in the garden, however, with Mikey Sheehy a doubt for the final against Dublin. An Achilles tendon injury was Sheehy's ailment. He had played against Galway, but his participation in the decider was now in doubt.
I played with painkillers again that day, but what happened then was my Achilles tendon, it just gave out basically in training, I'd say about 10 days before the Ireland final. And in fairness to Nico again, he was very good to me. because, you know, I was obviously in fairly good physical condition anyway. Coming up to the final, and he said to me, look, he says, leave it alone for another few nights. And I said, no, they were playing a bit of a game. I said, look, I'll do a bit of stretching, I'll do a bit of a jog, and I'll play in the game. Played in the match anyway, and I wasn't doing too bad, but I could feel it picking at me. And next thing I made a sprint for a ball, and next thing, bang, the thing just went like, and it was, I was in crutches then for the week. Even though I tugged out for the All-Ireland final, but why he tugged out, I don't know. But I remember again, Mikko, in fairness to him, he said to me, we won't rule you out until the end of the week. I was over the training, obviously, the Tuesday and the Thursday night, and I think he picked possibly number 13 that day. I'm fairly sure. My mother, poor woman, was praying for miracles, and so was I myself. You do stupidly think that you're going to wake up in the morning and it's going to improve. Nah, but it was not. There was no chance. And Mikko, in fairness to him, as I said to you, I didn't ring him until Saturday morning before we met up in Kinnaird, and I said, Mikko, nah, I'm gone. And he knew deep down, but I'd say he was only trying to keep me going and keep my spirits up, you know, so I was never going to play in that final, any part of it.
With Mikey Sheehy ruled out of the final, his Austin Stacks clubmate Ger Power started instead. Despite Kerry's achievements from 75 to 83 in winning five All-Ireland finals, it was widely felt that the side was on a downward spiral. The Kingdom had proved their detractors wrong up to now, but Dublin were seen as the ultimate test. The men from the metropolis were the defending champions and expected to take over the mantle of greatness from the Kingdom. Captain Ambrose O'Donovan says manager Mick O'Dwyer used such talk to their advantage.
I think it was the RTE guide. He plastered that all over the wall above in the Grand Hotel in Malahide the morning of that night. We went on for a walk down the beach, and we came back. This Kerry team are over the hill. The sell-by date is up. And that's all he wanted us to see. He said, this is what I think of us, lads. You know, he said, and this is what will be written after us if we don't win. I think down then every fellow got very conscious of the fact that there is a lot of people against us. So, I mean, from that point of view, it was a great spot on.
In scenes reminiscent of the Kerry fans of old, one Kingdomite opted to cycle to the 1984 All-Ireland final. Castle Island's John Curtin wanted to mark the fact that it was the 100th year of the GAA.
I went to Turles, cycled to Turles for the hurling final before that, and I had a few marathon cycles done from Dublin to Belfast at the time. That was a kind of a charity thing. So I was cycling and out to work from Castle Island to Tralee. That was it. That was going to be the finale then, to go to Croke Park for the centenary final. Mostly the preparation I was in and out from Castle Island to Tralee, I suppose, and at the weekend then I do an odd long cycle, like maybe around, I went around the Ring of Kerry once, all right, don't know, maybe 30 or 40 miles here and there. I went from Castle Island to Limerick, that was 3 hours, I suppose. Then from Limerick to Dublin, I left at 8 o'clock. So I got there about 4. I know it was a bit slow, all right, but I got as far as Portlaoise, okay, but from Portlaoise on, it was kind of slow. There was a lot of stops. People on their way to Dublin, they stopped. Now, it was great because I got a lot of grub and little drops of drink and things like that. So it kept me going, but it slowed it down slightly. But it was grand. It was perfect. I arrived there around 4, all right, in a deluge. It was raining in 84 as well. A pure deluge of rain from Newlands Cross in. Oh, God, I did. I went to the match, all right, yeah. Oh, my God, I came home in the car, all right. The bike was put in the boot of the car. Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out, like, I suppose if there was another 3 in a row or something like that, I would maybe have a go at it again, all right.
In his first All-Ireland final, Ambrose O'Donovan had the honour of leading his county into battle. There's an old saying of play the game and not the occasion. It's not always possible, however, to treat every match as just another game, as O'Donovan recalls.
You'll want your heart checked before you go out. When the hairs on your neck stand, and the normally don't stand before matches, I would be normally cool enough before a game. But I mean, I remember the hair stood on my neck, and I remember my legs went like jelly. The first 3 steps I took onto the pitch, Jesus, I took a look around me and I says, wowie, what's this thing? You know, it is a fantastic feeling. But I mean, at the time, it can be frightening and nerve-wracking. And then, you know, the one thing they said, with all the experience, they reckoned it was getting harder and harder every year. Crowd, your poor, always said that, like, it gets harder and harder, and they get more and more nervous as every year you go to it.
O'Donovan may have been one of the Kerry newcomers in 84, but teammate Sean Walsh has revealed the Guineguilla man's pre-match speech that All-Ireland final afternoon set the tone for what lay ahead.
Ambrose was a young man coming in, different type of captain. He spoke with passion, and he was a fantastic speechmaker before games, and I'll never forget the spirit before we went out playing Dublin in 1984 and the speech that Ambrose made. I've never been in a dressing room that was electric before going out in the field.
The greatest day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles, brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
The final against Dublin was a game Kerry dominated from the off.
And it's Mick Spillane who's going to take this one. He drives it along a straight length in this. And Gerry Hargan is being caught by the Bomber. The first ball between the two of them, and the Bomber wins it. Still on distance, steadying himself, hitting it high and hitting it over the bar. And a great score from the Bomber.
Oh, wonderful score by the Bomber. They're playing into the railway goal. He even dropped back. Hargan went up for the ball and went over his head in the Bomber. There's no beating, says the fella. A big man around the square. And Bomber got the ball from behind his men, fielded the ball, went through and just popped the ball over the bar. A lovely point by him.
Ambrose driving inside now towards the full foul line. Ger Power is in a rush there, and he's trying to get it there ahead of his man. Is that Mick Kennedy, I think, who's battling for it inside? There's a free in wishing to carry.
Yeah, free in. Power was definitely fouled there. Ger Power wearing number 17 on his back, and it was Ambrose O'Donovan got the ball, lifted across the face of the goal, just in front of his 16. Power got the ball. He was pulled and he was dragged, brought down, and this is going to be a 14-yard free, Gary. No, actually, it's just outside the 14, and I think it's going to be John Kennedy who's going to continue the free.
John Kennedy, of course, in the absence of Mikey Sheehy today, drives it high and over the bar. The hill is silent at the moment. Ambrose releases John Egan. John Egan releases John Kennedy. John Kennedy with a magnificent score once again.
Ambrose to Kennedy. Kennedy to Ambrose into John Egan. John Egan saw Kennedy running inside him, and a beautiful weighted pass into him with the left hand. And Kennedy would right through, and with the right leg popped the ball over the bar. A lovely point by Kennedy.
It was the 14th minute before Barney Rock opened Dublin's account. Pat Spillane cancelled that effort out before Rock put over again. With 22 minutes gone, it was Kerry 4 points, Dublin 2. Pat Spillane pointed for Kerry, which Dublin responded to with a point of their own from Tommy Conroy. It was Kerry who brought the first half scoring to a close.
Ambrose loses possession, regains it, plays it back outside, pulled to the ground. Surely it has to be. It's a free in. John Kennedy, or John Egan, absolutely pulled to the ground. And it's going to be taken by John Kennedy. Over the bar, no problem in the world from John Kennedy. And the ball is lifted inside there again. It's gone across the face of the goal, and it's John O'Leary, who very, very nearly got mixed up there with his man. Pat Spillane nipping in from nowhere. Here's Pat Spillane with the kick. This is curling nicely, and it's gone over the bar. That's a great score, Rishi, from Pat Spillane.
Oh, lovely point by Spillane. A trademark. Pat Spillane scored. The ball came in. John O'Leary missed it, broke out. Pat Spillane nipped in, took it away from the defender, and he turned around right on the 21-yard line, and he had a look at the goal, kicking into the railway goal here in Croke Park, and with the right leg, like a golfer. What a beautiful style he has. He has a unique style. Popped the ball over the bar. Lovely point.
Kerry's half-time advantage was 4 points, 7 points to 3. When the second period got underway, Kerry continued where they had let off.
John Kennedy looking up, spraying it now, this time to who? Out to the Bomber. The Bomber ahead of Gerry Hargan. The Bomber half-slipping, kicking it high with the left arm. Some kick by Owen Liston.
Oh, great point by Liston. Paddy O'Shea to John Kennedy. Kennedy looked around and he saw Liston across the far side of the field in front of the Hogan stand, and he put the ball right across the field to him. Liston got the ball. He turned around. He had a little look. He was going to pass it off. Hopped the ball once, and with the left leg and two defenders bearing down on top, he was kicking into the canal goal with the left leg, floated the ball beautifully over the bar.
So John Kennedy, wind behind him now, steadying himself, taking this 45-metre kick, drives it long inside again. That's a great kick from Kennedy. Clipped the crossbar over the bar.
That was a lovely kick by Kennedy there. Put the ball down, as you said. Made a little divot for himself. Teed the ball up right on the 45-metre line. Kicking into the canal goal. He came up beautiful style with the right leg. Got his leg under it beautifully. And it went straight and through over the bar there. John O'Leary jumped high. Got his hand over the bar. Just barely touched the ball. Lovely point by Kennedy.
There was clear daylight between the sides now. Kerry 9 points. Dublin 3. Dublin gave themselves a fighting chance with a score of their own 9 minutes in.
PJ Buckley drives it inside again. Tommy Conroy looks up. Tommy with that great left kick. We haven't seen much of him so far. Fjord get across. Barney Rock is trying to get inside his man. He's got inside. It's a goal chance, and it's buried by Barney Rock. Absolutely out of nothing.
Absolutely. That's the straight of Barney Rock. He can get a goal out of nothing. The ball floated across the verge of the square, and Barney Rock went up, got inside his man, and he turned around in the left leg, and with the right leg he just cracked the ball low into the corner of the net.
That proved to be a false dawn for the Dubs, as Kerry did what Kerry do best.
Ger Power has it again. What a strong man he is, getting away from McKennedy inside to Ogie Morton, dodging around 2-3 players. Ogie with the left leg, and Ogie with a brilliant score.
Oh, lovely point, and that was a hard-earned point, I can tell you, because Ger Power, after getting that belt in the corner flag, got up again, suffered another little tackle, turned around, passed the ball out to Ogie Morton, and Ogie Morton just swiveled around, got the ball onto his left leg, and he turned around and with the left leg just popped the ball over the bar, which was Ger Power that made that.
Jacko to Spillane inside against a Bomber. Bomber kicks it high. Bomber looking good. Oh, it's got left and wide. It's a 14. It was a late challenge in actual fact. And John John Kennedy has tipped over that 14-yard free.
Getting back to Bombardier, as we said, he kicked it to hope to see why he did, because there was a very late tackle and he was upscuttled, and the referee gave the free in, and as you said, John Kennedy came up there and popped the ball over the bar.
Back-to-back Burnley Rock points meant there were three between the teams with 13 minutes remaining. Two scores and a three-minute spell after that finally put paid to Dublin.
Gathered in the middle of the field here again now by Ger Power. Ger Power releases. That's John Kennedy. John Kennedy just inside the 45-metre line. Plays it inside to Pat Spillane again. The hits go in from the Dublin defence. Spillane with his back to goal. Drives it long, long inside. It's curling high. That's some score from Pat Spillane.
Oh, that's an absolutely inspirational point. That's a wonderful, wonderful point by Pat Spillane. To remind you of Tiggy Lyne back in the 50s from away out in the wing, a big high ball. And it was John Kennedy who got the ball. Hopped the ball once. Saw Spillane running inside. Passed it off at the right fist. Spillane was surrounded by his men, but he got away from him, and two men coming down top him, and from way out the field he hit a big huge high kick, kicking into the canal goal, dropped the ball on top of the net. It's 1-5 to 12 points. What a wonderful point.
Tom Spillane away back there, and Thomas tearing out of defence and gives it to Paddy O'Shea. Paddy has help outside him. He's been harassed all the time, and Tom Spillane nipping in now once again, and Tom releases it outside here to Ambrose O'Donovan. Takes the shoulder, turns his back, grimacing in the face, driving it long inside. There's a loose man inside here, but it's going to be Ray Hasley who picks it up once again, and he's played it out near the sideline, very near the sideline. Tommy Drum's pass has gone astray. It's gone astray to Owen Liston to Ger Power. This will see it. Ger Power to Jacko for a goal, and it's just skipped across Burnley and over the bar.
Oh, Jacko would be disappointed with that, because there was a goal on there, and Ger Power set him up there. Jacko got right through, no one to beat, but the goalie with the left leg went for the goal. The ball flew over the bar, and when that ball was going over the bar, I saw Joe Cahan, the Kerry selector, throw his two hands up in the air as if to say, lads, we have it now. But that should have been a goal there, Gary.
9 minutes left on the clock, and Kerry were now in front by 13 points to 1-5. Burnley Rock and Owen Liston swapped points before the end. Kerry had banished those memories of 82 and 83. The Kingdom were All-Ireland champions once more. Ambrose O'Donovan now had to compose himself for the All-Ireland presentation and the speech.
The first thing is fear. You must make your speech, and all of a sudden you've got about 30 seconds while you have the euphoria of winning and you're hugging your players and everything else, your teammates, and then you have to realise, now I've got to do this. And there's a man above in Croke Park. He just makes a beeline for you straight after the game and grabs you by the jersey. But you know, he caught me that day by my shoulder, and I says, if you don't take your hand, I said, one of the two of us will be going to hospital and it won't be me, I said. Well, he said, you have to come straight up. I said, 1 minute now, I said, I'll be up with you. I said, I'm going up. I said, I'm not running away at all. But I wanted to meet Tommy Drum. He was captain Dublin that day. I see Kerry the way they felt in 82, and I know the way Tommy felt in 84. So I mean, I shook hands with him, and I wanted to do that before I was pulled, but your man kept pulling me, and I felt like just lashing out at him. It's a lovely walk up to Hogan. Now, it's a far nicer walk down when you have your speech made. I can tell you, it is a right good crack coming down, but going up, it's fearful. We made the speech, and the fella said, the rest is history, but it's a nice walk coming down with the cup, I can tell you that. Now, I was black and blue by the time I reached the dressing room. Fellas well wishers hitting me across the back, they never hit me as hard, but a nice one when you have the cup. I had a couple of great men helping with the speech. Shawnee Walsh, I suppose, was excellent. I remember walking down that Saturday night, walking down the beach, and Shawnee was saying to me, like, have you a few words put together? And I said, well, I have. I said, I'm not being cocky in any way, but I mean, I know exactly what I want to say. I said, being honest about it. And he kind of said, well, he said, run it by me. And the one thing he said to me, he said, it's important, he said, that you mentioned Dermot O'Donoghue. I said, you know, the hard luck and everything else he had, you know, it will ease the burden for him. He said, and like he was saying, he said, you can imagine what way Dermot feels. We're great friends, he said. But you must remember, he could be up there for that cup if we win it. So from that point of view, it is important. And of course, Piché was lecturing me in Irish. Little did he know that my own wife is a Gaelic speaker as well, and she was educated behind in Colastide.
The realisation of what he had achieved is etched firmly in the memory of John Kennedy.
The final whistle that day was something that will stand in my mind forever. Just realising that I had won in All Ireland with Kerry, and that you know, it, while it didn't sink home for quite some time after, the fact that when the final whistle went and the celebrations began, it was then that you realised that, look, you had done something special.
Winning the centenary All-Ireland was always going to be memorable. Pat Spillane, however, had more reason than most to appreciate this victory. Two seasons previous, such a scenario seemed an impossibility for Spillane.
I was told in 1982 I'd never again play football because of rupturing my anterior cruciate ligament, and it was like the end of the world being told that. And then started trying to prove them wrong and slogging for 2 years, and then coming back and winning another All-Ireland. I mean, I never thought I would ever again
be playing football, not a mind playing in an All-Ireland final, not a mind playing in a winning team. So it was great.
Pat's younger brother Tom also has fond memories of that year's success. Nostradamus-like, Spillane Jr. had visions of what was to be.
Somewhere in St. Brinsons, I know I would etched on some wall or some table somewhere that it would have been an ambition, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, to win a medal in centenary year. And to win it in 84 was special.
Poet and writer Gabriel Fitzmaurice was among the celebrating Kerry fans that day. Even a nasty post-match incident with some Dublin supporters could not dampen Fitzmaurice's spirits.
We left Croke Park and we came down in great mood. Dubs and Kerry men all jostling and having great fun. So coming down, the Dubs were just cheering at us and it was great. But anyway, this group of young Dubs came down the place singing and roaring and shouting and doing the clown. And they saw the Kerry lads outside the Belvedere Hotel. And they stopped. No, all they had was flags. They stopped and they started shouting at us, "Ye filth, ye filth." So we took absolutely no notice, you know. Then one of the young Dubs launched a kind of a Bruce Lee kung fu kick. There was a kind of a schmozzle and he was repulsed. But then suddenly it got dirty and the Dubs came with their flags and they started raining belts in us. No, those flags, they weren't up to much, like. But we just pushed them away. There was no fight, like. We just pushed them back. We began to move into the Belvedere. We were moving in slowly into the Belvedere, well, as quickly as we could, but that was slow. The whole thing was over in about 5, 6, 7 minutes. But it was an ugly end to a perfect day.
Ambrose O'Donovan had lifted the Sam Maguire as Kerry were crowned centenary All-Ireland champions. O'Donovan subsequently discovered that not everyone had faith in his ability heading into the final.
I remember one man said to my father, he said, and my father said it to me after, and there was, you know, a temper coming up my father's eyes. I could not know. And he said, and I won't use the exact phrase he said to me, but he said, you know, that stump of a fool. So he said to me, he said, "I hope," he said, "that Ambrose will finish the game, that he won't be taken off." Jesus, that's an awful way to be thinking. And there was fire leaving my dad's eyes. But I mean, you know, I suppose he was saying it out loud, what a lot of people felt, but wouldn't say it to me, you know, just in case that the fellow get downhearted. But I mean, things like that, little steps that to drive you on as well, to make you more conscious of the fact, you know, listen, you're captain, you might only get one cut of this. It's important, but the fact that I was captain, I think I would have gone through the wall that day above, you know, rather than being taken off. You have to be positive as well, and I found the wire and the rest of the boys, as I say, it was everything that was positive, you know. You went into the game in a positive mental state, and that was good.
Two future Kerry stars list that 84 final as their first memory of the big day. Declan O'Keefe actually went to the match.
Yeah, I got to the 84 final with my dad. Something that wouldn't happen. No, I got in over the turnstiles and his shoulder, like, you know. So it was great. It was a fabulous memory. I was in Hogan's stand that day on my dad's lap, and to see Kerry winning the centenary final and Ambrose O'Donovan being the captain as well from the neighbouring club in Guineafgula. My dad, Dermot, is a Guineafgula man as well, so very proud day for him and a proud day for the parish of Ratmore. As I say, the Shalev Lochray area again, and I can still remember the excitement and the absolute, I suppose, joy of winning that, especially after 82 and after 83, and the significance of centenary year as well. And I suppose my memory of that final is the display of Pat Spillane, wing forward, is absolutely tremendous. Like, you know, he was actually tremendous in them three finals as well, like 84, 85 and 86. So
it's the customary visit of the cup to the local national school that Seamus Moynihan recalls.
My biggest memory would have been Ambrose coming to the school, coming to Barrow National School. I say I was in fifth class at the time, and you know, I suppose at that stage you were only becoming interested more into Kerry football, and I can remember the excitement that it brought, bringing the Sam Maguire to the school, and I suppose Ambrose being a local person as well from Guineafgula.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.